the buzzer. McCord on its way.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Yo, in the aftermath of last night, Dan Dockage and Seth Greenberg spread out all across the country as they try and make their way back home, wiping the sweat off their collective brows after a long and arduous basketball season came to a very exciting end in Minneapolis last night. I'm Chris Cotter. Guys, the first couple of minutes of this game, I was really worried. I guess both teams were what? One for 11?
Cotter, why were you worried?
Because I thought it was going to be a
dud. Why were you worried?
What do you have to worry about?
A
total dud. 1 for 11 from the field. I thought the final score was going to be 13-11. I mean, I was scared. And then things started. They got cooking in the second half. And I know both these teams are all about defense, Coach Greenberg. But the offense has started to really click in the second half. That's kind of the thing that surprised me. And that made for a very exciting game.
Teams settle in. It takes time to settle in. They're playing on a humongous stage, and fatigue became a factor. And I thought fatigue became a factor defensively, mentally, physically, emotionally, and all that other good mumbo jumbo. But these are two good teams. And then Virginia's a very good offensive team. And at times, Texas Tech is a good offensive team. They're just overshadowed by being absolutely terrific defensive teams. But you expected it to start the way it started. They're playing for a national championship. As mature as they are, as well as they've handled everything along the way, it was a different situation playing for championship, two elite defensive teams, two teams that probably were more prepared defensively than they were to face the opponent offensively. What do you say, Dan Dockage?
Well, I say this. I say that it did start out that way. There's no denying that. And you do settle in. And, you know, I think – the two best teams in college basketball were playing last night. You can make the argument that Virginia got lucky, but Seth, Chris, here's what I go back to this, and I go back to leaving DeAndre Hunter for a wide open three when you're up three. Victory favors the team making the fewest mistakes, and Virginia doesn't beat themselves. Let me ask you guys this. We talk in the history of three of college basketball championship nights, Michael Jordan, Keith Smart, Chris Jenkins, all that kind of stuff. But DeAndre Hunter's three is as big a three as we've ever seen in the championship game. You miss that, you lose the game, really. You make that, you get a chance in the game. And leaving him up three was the play of the game, in my opinion. You cannot do that. Let the layup happen. Don't leave the shooter, who's hot.
I agree with you. And, you know, I'm going to give you two things. One, they switched that. There's a little bump at the top of the circle.
Yes.
Odiasi switches, took a bad angle. I mean, you can't get turned your shoulders like that. And then two players, not one player, two player over help, and boom, ball gets kicked out. I'll tell you the play no one's talking about, D squared.
Mm-hmm.
Let me educate the listeners, because
please,
no one's talking about this. At the end of the first half, Texas Tech had two fouls to give.
Yeah.
They only had four personal fouls.
Hmm.
So, end of the first half, they have two fouls to give. You give those two fouls, and maybe you don't give up a three, and all of a sudden, that three could be the difference in the game. No one's talking about that. I don't understand it. It's real simple. You got two fouls to give. Give your fouls, shorten the clock. And look, I'm not second guessing anyone, because Chris Beard, to me, he's like become my idol, because I slept on the floor at Final Fours also, but I didn't get to the championship game. So, I mean, Chris Beard is the man. But I mean, give the fouls and then, you know, see what happens. At the end of the game, him not giving the foul, I got no problem with that. Too much time on the clock. Unfortunate. I thought that Jerome did a really good job of setting it up. He's kind of walking it up, lulling you to sleep a little bit. Then they step up and set that little flat ball screen. He goes, bam, and then everyone helps. Everyone overreacts, and Hunter makes it. Look, Hunter was great, 22 points in the second half. He was great defensively as well. The job he did on Culver, and the job – I'm going to give you my two X factors after the fact.
Ooh.
Braxton Key and Mamadi Diakite,
mm-hmm,
those dudes were balling. I mean, they were flying around, and they were good defensively. But the big three in the end, 67 points – DeAndre Hunter, and the job they did on Culver was terrific.
I love Diakite, the way he rebounds. I mean, he gets a hand in there. He kind of sneaks a hand in there, tips it to himself often. He's just uncanny with that ability.
You know, Chris, to your point, Diakite really influences games. in those ways, you know, he hits the big shot against Purdue. So obviously there's the influence, you know, big time. Everybody remembers, everybody knows, but he gets hands on balls. He rebounds, he tips. He's always, I swear to God, he is always in the right spot defensively. And you know what? I hate to keep beating a dead horse, but if you're a coach out there and you're listening to this, I swear to God, if I ever went back into coaching, I think I'd teach my team not to beat itself more than I'd teach my team anything. Like, I just watch. You know, Jared Culver, okay, you know, Gabe had these statistics on us. All right, Jared Culver missed shots. He was 5 of 22. But listen to this. This is what was interesting when I saw this statistic. And Seth, you and I really aren't statistic guys, but he takes 22 shots, okay? 19 are contested. 19 of 22 shots are contested. And here's even, as I watched it this morning again, here's even more amazing. They're running a motion offense for the most part, not all, but for the most part, where you have to react to a variety of things to get out to contest his shots. I just think the defense on him, the ability to contest 19 of 22 shots, doesn't mean they were the hardest shots. I mean, contested can mean a lot of things. But the fact that you're there for the entire game on that high volume, it's remarkable to me. And again, I go back to this. Virginia simply doesn't beat themselves. And contesting the best player's shots is one way to not beat yourself, fellas. It is.
And the guy that was contesting it was the guy that was the offensive hero as well.
Dropping 22 in the second half while he's doing
a lot of money
that.
On the way.
Huh?
And making a lot of cash on the way, because that dude's going to be the fourth pick in the draft.
Behind
DeAndre Hunter's going to be the fourth. He's the perfect. He's OG Anunoby with a little bit quicker first step and maybe a little bit at this point in time, a little bit more consistent. I mean, he shot 42% from 3-point line.
I mean, DeAndre Hunter is his rebounding. That's the only thing I'd worry about. But
yeah,
but,
I agree with that. But
what are you going to do?
The game in itself, you know, you made a point a second ago, Dan, and I think it's important. These two teams are really good, and these two teams have earned their way, but you know, built totally differently. And I thought, and it kind of made me sick in a lot of ways. You know, Virginia has this saying, "Calm is contagious," and if you looked at Tony Bennett on the sideline,
oh,
he was so poised, so calm, so relaxed.
And his dad, you know, meanwhile, is having a heart attack up in the stands.
His dad was living it for him. But I mean, that's how his team played when the game was on the line. Whether it was the fortunate play in the Auburn game, whether it was fortunate play in the Purdue game, those kids never seemed rushed. And with everything they've been through, to carry themselves in that manner, to me, was absolutely phenomenal. And it's a great reflection on him. And on the other hand, you listen to people that can be, I don't know what the right word is, but Chris Beard and at the podium yesterday. And when they asked him about, you know, what do you tell your players walking off the court? And see, that's what people don't understand. People say, oh, coaches make too money, coaches this, coaches. There's a perfect example of coaches are invested in their kids' lives. Coaches care to the point where almost they're obsessive worrying about their players. And, you know, relationships in coaching to me, you know, Dan, you might, and I might think, are very real. And, you know, those kids took him on a heck of a journey, but you could see the connection he had with his team. Cynical is what I was going to use. And, you know, people, were talking about, you know, well, how's he going to get to all their, you know, like you know, Bill has had a great life. How's he going to get to all the times that his former players have kids? We all laugh and all that. And Jace, we're having a good time. We're kind of punchy on the set, but here's my deal is that's why you coach, man. Like none of us got it for us, at least none of us got to coach for money. We all got to coach because we love the game and we want to be involved in the game and we want to impact people's lives. The money came after that. And you could see that emotion had nothing to do with money. That emotion had to do with relationships. Oh. And I thought that was, to me, you know, that was one of those moments that if you ever think about getting back to coaching, you could tell that was one of those moments we don't have doing what we do now.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think that coaches let's continue this for just a second. I obviously there's a lot going on with coaches. Obviously there's a lot of negativity going on with coaches, and that's what you read. But on a daily basis, what you saw out of Chris Beard is what you see in most programs. Obviously not on that stage, okay? I mean, there's only two teams on that stage, four teams over the course of the weekend. But on a daily basis, that's what you see out of coaches. Heck, I got a stepson that's playing football at a Division III school, and I see it all the time with him and a new coach who just came in. I think this was a very good, including Bruce Pearl and the way he handled the double dribble, I think this was a very, very good Final Four for coaches, if anyone's paying attention. Mm-hmm. Another direction, just real quick. Coaching mistakes in this game, Seth, Chris. I get off the play. I'm watching the game, and I'm listening to talk radio, and guys are talking about coaching. First thing, this guy didn't do this. This guy didn't do that. Did anybody make a mistake in this game that really cost their team, that really mattered?
No, I would say not giving the foul at the end of the first half, but I mean that's a philosophical.
Yeah.
Anything else? I mean, no. Look, these two guys coached their tails off, and the kids played their tails off for them. And the guys on the bench. How about the guys on the bench? How engaged were guys that hadn't gotten a game in 2 weeks?
Yeah. Or even in the final minute of the game when you saw, I think it might have been Salt and Diakite on the bench, locked arm in arm. Not being able to be in there in the game, I guess it might have been an offense-defense substitution thing for Coach Bennett. But even those guys, it was like the intensity on that bench, which I loved. And, I tend to take a bigger picture approach than you two guys, but I thought that, I'm trying to think, is this game going to be memorable? Is it, when it comes down to the wire, are we going to think back to how great of a Final Four and how great of a game this was? And I think it kind of got to that point because of the tension that both sides had to deal with. And to your point about the emotion, too, I thought Texas Tech, they were so emotional after that loss. I know teams are always emotional after going five wins and getting all the way to the championship game and losing, but I thought it was a little bit maybe even more with them. I thought that maybe they kind of felt like, wow, Texas Tech, we've never been here. And we finally had a chance to win one for our school and we couldn't get it done.
Chris, to your point, I'm telling you, Texas Tech's a basketball school based on the amount of people that were in Minneapolis that flew up into me. I talked to so many people that, hey, I had to get on a flight. This is my school. We'd never been here before. The only thing, when I heard the lead up to the game and people were saying kind of what you were kidding about to start this, Chris, mm-hmm. which is, I thought it was going to be a rock fight. I thought we were going to have all that kind of stuff. Here's what I want in basketball. I don't mind the 1-0 pitchers duel. I want that tension. I want to watch that tension. I want to watch down to the end a hell of a game with two teams and kids that care so much and coaches that are putting everything in. And we got that. And then we got great play. And then we, the scoring wasn't an issue. After 5 minutes, the scoring was like, it was the college basketball game. So it delivered to me in every single way. And it also delivered to me, and this is, I'm curious between you two guys, it delivered to me the best team in college basketball over the course of the year being the national champion. Do you agree with that?
And Coach, just let me interject this real quick to answer that question. Not a lot of star power. I mean, you talk about DeAndre Hunter as a top five NBA pick, so he certainly is one you can put on the pedestal. But you look around that team and you think about previous national champions over the years and ones that we remember, they're full of NBA teams or at least, first team All-Americans on the team. And this team is much more of a team concept, and guys that maybe you may not remember in 10 or 15 years from now.
Hey, Chris, it's real simple. We start the season talking about all the freshmen and how good they are, and those guys are going to go in the NBA, and they are. We were Zionized.
Yeah.
All right?
We were Zionized.
And you know what? At the end of the season, it's no different than when North Carolina won it. It's no different than when Villanova won it the last 2 years. We're talking about the best teams. Yeah, Villanova had four pros last year. But, Ty Jerome's no different in a lot of ways than Jalen Brunson. And DeAndre Hunter's no different than Mikal Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And, Kyle Guy in a lot of ways is no different than Dante DiVincenzo. And in the end, we're talking about the best teams. We're talking about the teams that have shared experiences, that play the game, that can compete, defend, and execute when the game is on the line. Teams that score more than 0.776 points per play in the half court like Duke did. Teams that can't just overwhelm people, but out execute people and out execute offensively and defensively. So, like, we saw a heck of a game. And, like, I don't care about counting pros because, you know what, the only freshmen that have had an impact in the last four Final Fours have been minuscule. Tony Bradley, how much did he play for Carolina? The kid Collins from Gonzaga, how much did he play? Here's the deal. You can say what you want, but when you get to the championship game, yes, we've had Kentucky. Yes, we've had Duke. But since the one-and-done era, we've had good teams that know how to play the game and execute and can defend and compete. We've had good teams, and to me, that's what we got last night. We got a great game because we had two really, really good teams that understood how to play the game.
All right, let's go this route. How many pros are on Virginia?
Two.
Hunter?
Maybe three. Maybe
Hunter,
three.
Hunter, Jerome?
Ikite has a shot.
Yeah. Udonis Haslem-type player, right?
Yeah, yeah. Blend guy. Yeah. I don't think Guy's a pro.
I think Guy is a pro only because...
Situationally?
Yeah, and he looks like a guy that just walking down the street, but he got a ton of killer in him. I mean...
Is he better than Tyler Hero? Better pro prospect than Tyler Hero?
Probably not. Pro prospect and pro player to me are two different things. Pro prospect to me is, all right, 6'6", long arm, shoot the basketball, jump up. Pro player is, to me, where do you fit into play? Like, Tyler Hero's not going to be a star in the NBA, right? I mean, there's only, like, Brad Stevens said something so interesting to me one time.
Players.
He said,
it's a league of role players.
Yeah, 25 stars. Like, every team's basically got, you know, a face of the team, and everybody's a role player. I don't know, but my point is it used to be you had to have three first-round draft choices to win. And now what you got to have is a really good team because guys are leaving early and that kind of stuff. But you got to have a really good team. The interesting thing for me for Virginia is they were a really good team for the last 2 years. And it's a better story now because they lost last year in their worst defeat in the history of the school. But it becomes a better story now because of how this year ended. You see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, but it's also, you know, I thought those guys were, I thought Tony Bennett all weekend long, you know what blew my mind? All weekend long, I thought Tony Bennett would shy away from all that stuff. You didn't even have to bring it up to him when you talked to him. He brought it up. Like the losing to 16. They owned it to the point where it just became part of their life and they moved on.
Which is the way you should go about disappointment.
Speaking of which, now you kind of look to say, why Virginia has their national championship. Coach Beard has taken Texas Tech now to the Final Four. You've got all the one-and-dones that are going to be leaving. Looking at the landscape of college basketball moving forward, are we still going to see the same teams? In other words, remember when we went back and we picked our brackets when this thing first started? Our Elite Eights, our Sweet 16s were all chalk, and that's exactly how it ended up being. We all thought it's going to be the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the Virginias, the Gonzagas, these teams are going to be in the Final Four again. You see that continuing next year? You see the same cream that has risen to the top now over the last six, seven, eight seasons in college basketball, Seth? You see that continuing next year?
Look, I mean, Duke's always going to be good. Kentucky's always going to be good. Carolina's not going anywhere. Gonzaga's always going to get dudes, you know, and a mixture of guys from Europe and everywhere else. But there are going to be other teams that are going to emerge. And now what's going to hurt the emerging teams is the fifth-year transfer. Because if they eliminate the fifth-year transfer, it's going to hurt some guys. It's also going to hurt the blue bloods because these fifth-year guys, when you're recruiting one and done, you need obviously Kentucky had Reed Travis. You know, they just signed a guy from Bucknell. So they're into the high academic guys transferring into Kentucky. Those guys aren't going away. But I do think that teams that get old, stay old, and add pieces, and are going to emerge. I don't think it's going to be the same school every year, but I just think that there are going to be opportunities for teams to emerge.
Like a Texas Tech, exactly like that way. These last 2 years, they've come out of nowhere.
I don't think Texas Tech is going anywhere.
You don't.
They're a program now. You're right. Hey, as long as Chris is there.
is if it, now if I'm UCLA, I'm saying to Chris Beard, I'll give you $8 million. Come on out to LA. Yeah. I would. I legitimately would do that if I was UCLA. But I look. You think about what Chris Beard did last year. Last year he takes Tubby Smith, some of his recruits, add some guys. Next thing you know, they make a run in the tournament. Now they reload with a bunch of guys that left, a bunch of guys in, and guess what? They're in a championship game. I don't see them leave. You know, I think the number one team in the country next year probably be Michigan State if everybody yep. stays. I would think anyway. You know, who knows how it's going to play out in the off season? But I don't think I do not think for one second that Chris Beard and Texas Tech are going away. Who would be another program like that emerged this year, Seth? Can you think of one off the top of your head that is not going away? I don't know. You know, I
don't think there's a team in the Big Ten that's like that because they're more established. I don't see, you know, an emerging team like that. SEC, you know, with the everything that's going on at LSU, you have no idea.
Auburn's a program.
What's going to happen here? Auburn, they're going to lose Bryce Brown. We'll see what happens with Okiki. You know, look, they're extremely well coached. They play confidently.
I think the one, you know, why don't we do this? Because when we get back, I want to continue this conversation, but I also want to look even more specifically to UCLA and what's going on with that job. So let's take a quick break here. We'll be right back. All right, back on the Courtside Podcast with Greenberg and Dokic. Let's talk about these coaches.
World's greatest podcast.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that goes without saying. That's redundant.
Not America's, the world.
Right. The Tennessee job, because I mean, we talk about the programs that have been on the rise lately and will stay there. I mean, Coach Barnes had a big money deal at UCLA, went back to Tennessee, and Tennessee said, we are not just a football school or a women's basketball school anymore. We are a men's basketball school, and we are going to step up to the table and pay you, Coach Barnes, and he stayed. And that's a signal to me anyways, Coach Greenberg, that is a program that is going to be there at the top of the SEC.
Yeah, they are. But, you know, everyone says, well, you know, UCLA paid him, you know, was ready to pay him $5 million. That was a pay cut. After state taxes and cost of living.
Right.
That was a pay cut. So, like, you know, if they wanted Rick Barnes, they need to pay him John Calipari money. Anybody, that better raise their hair on the back of his neck. But, I mean, you got to remember, you take the UCLA job and you're from somewhere else. You've got to factor in, all right, the state taxes and cost of living. Mm-hmm. So, look, UCLA to me is a great job. If they called, I would answer. But they haven't called.
For $5 million, you would deal with the state taxes.
Karen Greenberg could get by on $5 million, I think, even with the taxes. but look, they improved Pauley. They built a practice facility. They're committed to doing the right thing with chartering and traveling for recruiting and playing. And those four letters are powerful. But quite honestly, they've been a blank show. They've been played by, they're going to be once again, played by everyone, because you have a bunch of people that are running that search that really don't understand the landscape of college basketball. And they've done it in such a public way that it's embarrassing. But whomever gets that job, I don't care if they're the 10th selection. UCLA is a good job, especially with everything that's going on at Arizona and UCLA.
But here's the thing, though. As good of a job as that is, now you know Jamie Dixon, no Mick Cronin, no Rick Barnes. I mean, how far?
Mick might resurface.
Oh, Mick might resurface. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
You heard it here first on the World's Greatest Podcast.
Yeah, I don't understand. I go back. It's the Kentucky Calipari thing. Kentucky was always too good for John Calipari. Kentucky was always like, well, they looked down at John Calipari for years. Then they got to know John Calipari, and they hired the absolute best coach that they could possibly have at Kentucky and John Calipari. Right now, and this is something, I know there's an NCAA element, or at least I think there is, but I'm telling you, if it's even close, UCLA needs to quit screwing around, hire Rick Pitino, and get going. To me, unless they know something, I did hear the NCAA might have been sniffing around Louisville last week or so, but if it's not Rick Pitino, I don't understand why you're even acting a certain way. UCLA can do whatever they want to do. Nobody's going to tell them what to do, and that's cool. But, my God, just hire Rick Pitino and end the damn thing and go win yourself a national championship and everybody's going to be happy. I mean, let's not act – UCLA's a great academic school, but let's not act like this is Harvard or this has never been anything shady in the past. I mean, come on. Anyway, that's my take on the whole thing.
Too soon for Pitino? And here's the thing with Pitino, he's getting old, so too soon might be too late.
Here's the deal. You know, it's like anything else. Everyone wants to cover their rear end. And what happens if his name comes up? Because if UCLA could wait 3 weeks and wait for this, you know, like next week.
Yes,
next week,
you're right.
You're going to have coaches on the stand, subpoenaed, answering questions. You're going to have audio tapes of people talking and doing things. I don't know who's on those tapes. All right, but I don't think UCLA can do anything until next week happens.
I'll give you that with Pitino, you mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I'll give you that, but I would have that in my pocket so fast. You're right, I'm wrong, but I'm just the whole
idea. I agree
idea.
With you. Look, he's the perfect guy for that.
Yeah.
It's not even close.
The whole idea of offering Rick Barnes $5 million, as soon as I saw, you know what I did think? When I saw UCLA was involved with Rick Barnes, I said, boy, that's smart by UCLA. They're going to get themselves bailed out, and it's going to be, and then I saw, you know, as much as $5 million, and I thought, are you crazy? There's not a chance in hell Rick Barnes is leaving for $5 million. There's not.
How about that? Just think about what you just said.
I know.
And here's the deal. You know what I thought when I saw Rick Barnes' name mentioned? My dude's getting a raise.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
He's going to get some big orange money.
Orange bags.
That's the first thing I thought of. I said, my man Barnes, he's getting more money.
Let me ask you a question that I've had a philosophical discussion about. Why does a coach need a degree to coach college basketball?
Or the Earl Watson thing. I would think, here's my thing. If you're going back to coach your alma mater and don't have a degree, what does that say about that school's commitment to making sure you come back or, you know, your commitment to, you're selling education.
All right.
Now Earl Watson made a lot of money, played in the league for a long time.
What if Earl Watson is going back and Earl Watson is working on his degree and let's be honest.
With his players.
What?
With his players.
Study groups, like a study group with his players.
I'm not saying I think it's been done. I don't know, but I'm just saying, like, to me, we make this big deal. I'm sitting there at the Final Four and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? None of this other matters to these fans. All these fans want to do is be there rooting for their team. I mean, let's be honest.
Whether Earl Watson has a degree or not,
every UCLA person in the history of UCLA is going to be happy if UCLA was in Minnesota and with one of their guys as the head coach. I've really changed on this. I have. I used to be the snooty, uppity, well, if you don't have a degree, you've got to be working, blah, 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 blah. But I'm sitting there going, wait a second here. Like, Earl's trying to get his degree. You know, whether or not you want to hire Earl Watson or not, it's more of a broader, big picture question about why you need a degree. But to me, if I'm UCLA, you're right. You got to wait for Pitino to see, or I'm going to go get Bill Walton's son. So at least the guy who does Pac-12 games isn't ripping the coach like he's done for, you know. You know what I mean?
For all of
eternity. Valid point there, brother.
Yeah, so who ends up getting the job, you think, in the end, Coach Greenberg?
I think McCrone's going to get the job.
McCrone's going to get it. What do you think?
I agree. I think at the end of the day, either Rick Pitino's going to get the job or Mick Cronin, and I could be so dead wrong that Rick Pitino's not even considered, but I swear to God, at the end of the day, they're going to – if Mick Cronin continues to tell them to stick it or whatever Mick Cronin's doing, I can see them coming back to Rick.
Pretty much the last shoe to fall in terms of these head coaching positions. I mean, you've got Nevada open now with Musselman moving on, but by and large, the UCLA job looms large out there in terms of coaching vacancies still available.
Then Cincinnati would open up. Cincinnati. I personally think that Dan Dockich would be the leading candidate.
I would
for
love
position.
To see Doc there in the Queen City. Would love to see.
He would tear it up. It's his kind of town.
Yeah,
he'd go see the Reds play. He'd have to change over.
Get some skyline chili. Yeah.
Wait a second. Now you guys keep talking. Guy. I'm gonna freshen up my resume. Now, Cubs come in there 4 or 5 times a year.
Blow the dust off that thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, here's the bigger question is? This is a big question because I heard Dan Dockage at the Final Four numerous times and prior to the Final Four. I think next year at this time, you know, Dan Dockage and I, you know, we might look alike.
Oh, I'm going, yeah. Yeah, I'm coming home. I think I'm coming home tomorrow.
Really?
I think I am.
Wow, that is big news. All the things we've talked about all year long, that's the biggest news.
When you listen to courtside, we break news.
I'm not saying I'm keeping it because I could grow the swirl out from the right side, cross it over to the left.
Looking forward to seeing it. Looking forward to seeing it, Doc. Guys, thanks for a great year. It's been fun doing this with you guys. I really appreciate it. Courtside, the world's greatest podcast. Now we'll take a little break before next basketball season, so looking forward to that. Don't forget, be sure to check out the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst podcast as we draw closer to the NBA postseason now, and of course the draft coming up as well. Their latest episode, they gave their end of season awards, and remember to subscribe to Courtside wherever you get your shows and rate and review us in Apple Podcasts and Spotify. See you guys in a bit.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.